I am wondering if you've ever had something really important to you be destroyed. Right now, our house is just a clutter of baby paraphernalia, and frankly, it's even challenging to navigate our living room. And the other week, I moved around some furniture, and I had to make a tough choice. We have this cat hammock that has these two scratching poles and kind of a place for the cat in the center. And I knew in my heart it was time for it to go. It was rough looking. It's embarrassing when people come over and see it, that level. And so yesterday I threw it away. And it was in our trash bin out back, and unfortunately, it was kind of peeking out over the rim of it. And later that day, I saw Freya, our youngest cat, who loves that cat hammock. I saw her looking out the back window at it. And I felt the sadness that I had caused her. Now, when we first hear our text today, it's rough. You might respond, "That's what we're living through." And I understand. But we have to take just a moment here, because I know that's where your mind went, because it's where my mind went too when I first read this text. It's not a bad thing to place ourselves in the text, and it might feel very familiar with all the conflict and turmoil that we are facing right now in the world. But I want us to first remember that this text belongs to a specific time and a place. And what Jesus is speaking about here is the destruction of the second Jewish temple, a very important building and a very special place for Jesus' followers and many Jews. So we're going to put our history caps on here for a little while, so bear with me. First, the Gospel of Luke was most likely written after the destruction of the temple in the year 70 by the Romans. It's easy just to kind of gloss over that and call it like a history fact, but it was a horrible event. The temple was destroyed during the Jewish uprising. Jewish folks had risen up against the Roman Empire in Jerusalem, and it was a mess, because they themselves were also internally fighting amongst each other. There were zealots fighting with the friends of Rome. And it kind of resulted in this very bloody, very violent 7-month siege over Jerusalem that followed a 7-year conflict of protest over the Romans not respecting Jewish traditions and heavily taxing the people, bleeding them dry. And finally, the city of Jerusalem is taken, and it ends with the very beautiful, very solid, very opulent, Titanic-esque temple being destroyed. And people are killed, and many are dispersed to other areas of the world. So we really have all of the things that this text is describing. We've got warfare, violence, disease, people starving, fighting with each other, nation rising against nation. Everything evil in the text is happening. It's happening for the people who are first hearing this gospel, who are reading and listening to Jesus' words. So let's look at what Jesus says here and the context of kind of what's going on. Jesus is in the temple. He's in the temple with his disciples. That's who he's kind of speaking to here. And that's the second temple. If you're wondering, where's the first temple? Well, remember, it was built by King Solomon, and then it gets destroyed by the Babylonians, and that's like 500 years before Jesus is born. Then it gets rebuilt, and so we have the second temple here. And during Jesus' time, this temple is being expanded, it's being refurbished, it's looking beautiful and new. Herod the Great prizes himself on these building projects. And it took him roughly from 20 BCE to 63 to finish this. It was Herod the Great and then his successors after them. It's a lengthy and significant project. It costs lots and lots of money and time and energy and workers, and it's a sight to behold. It's built of this gleaming white marble. It's covered in gold plates. Imagine if somebody's house was covered in gold plates. What would you think of them? It's 150 feet high by the time it's finished. It's this source of great pride. It's the center of Jewish life, both religious and for basic everyday things. And the idea of it being destroyed feels like an impossibility. And it also triggers this sense of displacement, loss of identity for the Jewish people and for the followers of Jesus too. And so in the year 70, all of that comes to pass. The destruction, the people dying, the people being displaced and exiled from their homeland. But from this displacement, Judaism as we know it today is born. Instead of Levitical priests doing sacrifices in the temple, we get rabbis teaching the Torah in local communities and synagogues. Out of the rubble, Judaism lives on, and the Jewish people continue to worship God. And one disclaimer, I don't want you to think that I am calling this destruction good or like it's meant to be in some way. It's a political act of violence by the Romans. But we get the benefit of looking at it in retrospect. But imagine you're somebody at that time. It probably feels like the end of the world. And I do want to name that this apocalyptic text, it's not the end of Judaism, nor is it the end of Christianity. And we might also remember that the Roman Empire will rise and it will fall, as will many empires after it. Yet, the Jewish people and the Christian people continue to worship God. We are changed, of course, by everything, and we're resurrected. We're thinking new thoughts, new ways of being, but we're still endeavoring to be people who follow God. And so Jesus' message is for that time, a time when change is happening, where old things are ending, and hopefully something new will begin. It's teaching us that trusting in Jesus is different than trusting in a building. It's helping us to refocus our attention because when we meet Jesus in the text, he is in the temple. And his disciples, his sweet disciples, they are ogling the grandeur and the beauty of it. They are looking at the temple despite what Jesus has just told them. You see, immediately before this text for today, Jesus has talked about the widow who gives her last coin to the temple coffer. And often she is lauded as a really faithful person. This act is lifted up. But I always think, why did she have to give her last coin to this opulent, wealthy temple when she probably needed it to survive? We can easily twist that story into something admirable, but I just wonder, is Jesus using it as an example to turn the disciples from looking at the opulence of the building to looking at the widow, from focusing on the impermanence of human pride and building to the true focus of Jesus' ministry? So in the midst of this tension, seeing the very poor in a place of opulence, the disciples continue to look at the building. And this is where I see Jesus' message as for us and for them. It's this reminder of the impermanence of it all, of things that feel so important to us in the moment that they can go, they can be gone. It's a reminder for them and for us not to put our trust in those things, into man-made buildings, into man-made systems, because unfortunately they falter They fail. They turn to rubble like the temple. Instead, the hope is that within this apocalyptic and frankly kind of scary message, to help us remember to turn our eyes to the widow, to Jesus's message, and the point of following Jesus. It's an understandable response that we would focus on the parallel to our own times, the apocalyptic nature, because it's what grabs your attention. But we can't get stuck there. We have to take into account the rest of what Jesus says, and honestly, that's kind of rough too, because it almost feels like this personal call out. Jesus says, you'll be persecuted, great. Everything you love and know will come to pass, awesome, sounds good. But then you're gonna have a great opportunity. You're gonna get to testify. And to that I say, me? Or maybe the person behind me? Are you pointing at them, Jesus? I've got to do something. Are you saying, Jesus, that in the midst of all this terror and uncertainty and chaos, you want me to say something? So we have to wonder, what's the good news in that? When the safety and security of what we hold tight to begins to falter, how do we not lose ourselves in the despair of it all? And how do we manage to testify? That's why I think looking back at the widow is essential, because it reminds us of the point of Jesus. It reminds us that Christians have been surviving through centuries of rise and fall of empires, of plagues and violence and famine. And in the midst of that, we have to turn our eyes to Jesus, to his life and death and proclamation. We remember him as a soul, both human and divine, who was born of a poor and unwed teenage mother. We remember how he lived a life of peace, how he preached good news to those who needed it the most. Remember that he is persecuted for this message, a message that stands in contradiction of the empire. We remember that he's taken to a cross and he dies a painful death. And on that cross, he whispers, forgive them. Remember that 3 days later, it is the faithful women who come to the tomb. And when they look for his body, they find it empty. We remember that the resurrected and living Jesus meets them in the upper room, where they are hidden away in fear. And into that last moment, he sends them forth and tells them, proclaim peace. This is what Jesus offers, a resurrected life, a life out of the depths of despair, a life that won't falter, that won't be destroyed, that won't disappoint, something that sustains us even when the world around us feels as though it's crumbling. So don't worry. When you are called to testify, this is what you need to proclaim. Proclaim Jesus's life. Proclaim Jesus's death. Proclaim that in the midst of death comes resurrection. Amen.